Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
And the Media Project is back. Welcome. I'm Ira Fussfeld, retired publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York. And look who's over there. It's Judy Patrick, the editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, New York. Good day, Judy.
It's always great to be here at the Media Project.
Good to see you. And surprise, there's Alan Shartuck, who's almost always here. But we're going to express surprise anyway. And Alan, of course, for the uninitiated, is the chief cook and bottle washer here at Northeast Public Radio, a professor emeritus at the State University, columnist, publisher. What else? What am I forgetting?
Banjo player. Father.
Father. Oh,
grandfather.
Grandfather.
Not retired.
Not retired. Feet first.
And as a personality, I mean, you qualify certainly in this region to have been on the air on TV and on radio for decades. As a personality, you now qualify to be a candidate for the presidency of the United States.
You know, it's absolutely true. I think Trump is leading the way.
It's been said somewhat seriously that among the fallouts of the Trump candidacy and the whole fact that this guy, an outsider, could come in and run successfully so far, is that there will be other celebrities. There'll be a Mark Cuban candidacy or a George Clooney candidacy. Do you see that happening?
Well, it's possible George Clooney, although you'd have to tell me who Mark Cuban was.
Mark Cuban is a shark on Shark Tank, which is where most TV people know him, and he's an entrepreneur and owner of the Dallas Mavericks, the professional basketball team.
Oh, thank you for that.
Yes.
Now I know.
You know, but Ronald Reagan himself was a movie star. So it
George Murphy, or as Tom Lehrer once sang, at last we have a senator who can sing and dance.
Well, the aforementioned Trump continues to dominate the media, and we have an obligation, I think, to talk about him and react to what he's done. I wanted to read something that Dan Rather, the retired CBS anchor, wrote, because I think it's a good starting point. But this is after this press conference that took place last week in New York, in which Trump vilified the press in general and some members of the press specifically. Dan Rather said, "I felt a shudder down my spine watching Trump's fusillade against the press. This is not a moment to be trifled with. It wasn't his first tirade, and it won't be his last." And he went on to say, "This is not about politics or policy. It's about protecting our most cherished principles. The relationship between the press and the powerful they cover is, by its very definition, confrontational. This is how the Founding Fathers envisioned it, with noble clauses of protection enshrined in our Constitution."
Well, very nice. Very nice. If you haven't caught it, that's in a sort of condescending tone. I know that as editors of two very good newspapers, you guys will, of course, join people like the new owner of the Washington Post and others who come to us and tell us how bad this is. On the other hand, you got to get inside the other guy's head. And let me tell you, we do know that the press is not held in high esteem in the United States. So therefore, what he's trying to do is to stand on the shoulders of the press and use them as the whipping boy. We all know that. Great despots have always done that kind of thing, and that's what he's doing. But don't count him out and think that it's not going to be successful, because I suspect it is. He also stood on the shoulders of the judge who was deciding his case at Trump University, or in charge of his case at Trump University, and said bad things about him. and called him. I guess his, the worst thing he can come up with is he's a Mexican. It turns out he's not. You know, his family's been here for a long time.
He's born in Indiana.
But the truth doesn't bother him. And the way that the press reports anything doesn't bother him because it is water off a duck's back as far as his followers are concerned. I remember an ad in the Amsterdam News. I think it said Adam Clayton Powell was the congressman, and the headline said, "Oh ho hum, they're after Adam again." That's the kind of cynicism that occurs now.
You know, I'm going to surprise you, Alan, and agree with you in the respect that I think Dan Rather's overstating it a little bit. Politicians have always made the media the scapegoat. It is local as the local newspaper. I just talked to a young reporter this week about the fact that people are going to call up and be mean to them. They're going to attack them. This is part of what we do. And sure, I think Donald Trump has taken it to a new level, but I actually took heart from the interchange at that press conference, because at least it was a press conference and at least we can write about it. The other thing that comes to mind when we deal with these kinds of stories as an editor, we don't like to make ourselves the story too often. And in this case, they happen so regularly. We're faced with this issue of, do we make ourselves, you know, the lead story?
Wouldn't you say it's one thing to be critical of the press, but isn't it virtually never happened before or rarely has happened where the comments are so personally directed at individual reporters? Yes, Alan, the people who support Trump are inclined to hate the media, and they're cheering him on. And I understand this is a media show, not a political show, but do you believe that most people in this country don't turn their heads when they hear Trump do this kind of thing?
No, I do not. And I think that's the point I was trying to make. I think if you look at the polling of all the major American institutions, right at the top of the people who are disliked is the press. And the reason is that people have great reserves about the press. They think that some people own them and it's their voice that they're hearing. I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying that's what they think. And that's so important.
But where is the line between not liking the press and the decorum calling a network person a sleaze?
Decorum ishmorum. They don't care. That's what they like about the guy, that he doesn't do the political speak, that he says stuff that nobody else would say. And there are an awful lot of people in this country, I don't want to characterize them as a group, who feel that way.
You know, I think the polls about the press are a little bit like polls when you poll people about Congress. Everybody distrusts politicians in general, but they love their local politician. I think it's the same people about the media. In general, the overarching media is viewed as the big mean thing, but their local TV station, their local radio station, their local newspaper, well, I think they trust that.
The problem is that this guy is a huckster, and you can't believe a word he says, as Alan said. And among other things, people who have talked to Trump away from the microphones and the cameras. In particular, there is a profile this week. I commend you to read it on the Hollywood Reporter's website by a guy named Michael Wolff, who has written about a lot of media subjects, particularly about Murdoch. He spent time with Trump in California at his home. John Heilman, who the noted political reporter, and they both recently said, away from the microphones, Trump loves the press because he knows that he needs the press. He's the one who's fostered relationships with the press, and that when he gets up at a microphone at a press conference and says what he says about the press, it's all a reality show act. He's playing as if he was on the World Wrestling Association.
Right, and by a New York Times estimate, he's gotten $2 billion worth of free.
I'm not saying it's not working, but I am saying that I think and I hope that over the next 6 months that this act is going to wear thin and that wiser heads will prevail, and I think they will.
What in the world would make either of you believe, based on his success up until now, that it's going to wear thin? The only thing that I can think here is that you have to be able, if you're a Trumpster, you have to be able to keep raising the ante with more and more red meat. And eventually, when you do that, you get to a point where the red meat is so outrageous that you damage your credibility. But to be fair, we haven't seen any example of that yet.
Well, that's because the only voters have had their word were at the Republican primaries. And so he has certainly won over the plurality in that group.
Well, you'll pardon me, Ira, but I've just seen two polls which show Hillary and Trump within 2 points
right.
of each
well,
other.
Let's see what happens after the convention when one or the other, probably Hillary, emerges, and all of those other Democratic votes or polls will show it to her favor.
You know, he called the Washington Post reporter a sleaze, but the Washington Post reporter kind of considered it a badge of honor, tweeted about it. And
the ABC guy.
The ABC guy, right. Yeah. And, you know, I think reporters have to have thick skins. I think my reporters have been called worse than that.
Well, I think what was helpful from a press standpoint is that, and I think, I hope that you two will agree, that generally speaking, Trump has had a free pass for months from the media. They have not pressed him hard enough. They've not tested his lies out. And that is changing. It's more and more changing. And one of the, if you want to read body language, I was encouraged at that press conference. If you looked at the front row of that press conference, how the reporters were leaning forward. They were ready to get in and ask tough questions of these guys. He had the bully pulpit.
Ira, there is nothing that hasn't been explored with this guy. Right now, we're being treated daily to Trump University and all the people who were at Trump University who have bad things to say about him. What in the world makes you think that? I mean, you know, so the reporters were leaning forward. Oh, isn't that terrible?
So are you suggesting we just give up?
No, I'm suggesting you know the enemy. And in this case, this is a guy, we've got to think about what he is saying, why he's saying it at a particular time. You know, Ira, when you said before, there were people who went in there and talked to him and came away convinced that he loved the press. All the great despots always did that. They say one thing to one person, another thing to another person. And you're sitting there with them and you're thinking, oh, well, you know, then he's really not such a bad guy. Well, you know, there better be some kind of an understanding of what we're playing with here. Or like past history, we're bound to repeat it and it could be a disaster.
Well, I don't think they're coming to the conclusion that he's not a bad guy. I think that they are coming to the conclusion that this guy is a, got a split personality and that he'll say one thing away from the camera and another thing in front of the camera. And it's important for the press to expose this and to report as carefully and as thoroughly as they can. And at the end of the day, when November, whatever election day is this year, comes up, if Trump gets more votes, God bless him. But I don't think he will if he is fully exposed and the majority of the people in this country get their chance to say, no, this is not the kind of guy we want for president.
Well, as the old saying goes, Ira, from your mouth to God's ear.
You know, let's keep in mind, this wasn't a particularly contentious issue to begin with. How much money he raised for veterans and how he distributed it. And the questions were simple questions that needed to be answered. But it exploded, this press conference. And he and Donald Trump didn't seem to want to answer very simple
That's
questions.
Right.
How much money did you raise? And he seemed to take great offense that he was even being asked.
And when did you send the checks out?
Yeah, and when did you write the check?
The day that the Washington Post story came out saying he hadn't written any checks yet.
Right. Again, I remember when he avoided the debate and went to the veterans rally, and he was trumpeting the fact that he raised $6 million again and again and again. This was way back in February.
Well, I have a feeling we're going to be talking a lot more about this guy. Do you think so? Do you think he's
going
to go away?
At least until he gets elected president.
Oh, man. This is The Media Project. I'm Ira Fussfeld with Judy Patrick and Alan Shartok. Now, I know this will startle you, but it's possible that the State Department was playing fast and loose with video of a press conference, and mysteriously, a section of a press conference where a question was open, was asked in an open room, in the video of that question disappeared.
That's amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, and the State Department is not talking about who did it or why, and they're really not even talking about what they're going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again.
But they are fessing up that they did it. In other words, as I get this, and you guys are far better preparing for the show than I am, but as I get it, what happened is the Fox reporter's question disappeared, right? On the tape.
Right. This happened in December of 2013 at a press briefing. James Rosen of Fox was asking about the talks between the U.S. and Iran, and the video, that question that he asked, disappeared. And initially, the State Department said, oh, there was a glitch in the video. Now they're being a little bit more open about it and saying there was a specific request but made to excise the video, although it's not known who made that request. It just gives you reason for pause. This is the Obama administration now. This is not the Trump administration.
Right, and I think the portion that was erased or eliminated discussed the State Department essentially was fessing up that they weren't telling the truth.
That's right. The State Department was not being completely
honest.
What,
the State Department lies? This is unheard of.
Well, they don't usually come right out and admit it. And I think that was why this piece of tape disappeared. And again, I think the American public and the press does expect when you ask a politician or a government official a question, if they're not going to tell you the truth, then don't answer the question. Don't give us bad information. I think that's the foundation of everything.
Some years ago, I don't remember which organization it was, but I attended a journalism conference at the Gideon in Saratoga Springs, and one of the speakers was someone who had been a State Department spokesperson. And the point of the seminar was to be instructed about the way the State Department spokesmen answer questions and how, my word, divisive they can be. Or misleading they can be without not answering the question. Well, there is an art to it.
Well, that's right. I'm sure that's right. But, you know, I have to say that you can't, and I've said it many times, you can't have a democracy unless you have, you know, openness and transparency and people can see what's really going on. Well, the State Department is negotiating in secret all the time. They're negotiating with the Saudis. Oh, did you ever hear that? Our wonderful role models, the Saudis, who won't let women drive cars and have basic human rights? Well, that's right. So I'm just simply saying now the test is in an open press conference, they're going to start telling you things that they're not telling you every day because they're dealing with some awful people.
I'm saying just don't lie. If you can't tell the truth, say I can't comment on it. They say that a million times.
That's the kind of thing that directly or indirectly leads to the Trump phenomenon, because Trump can get up there and say, this is going to be a different kind of government. I'm going to tell you what's on my mind. And there are people who are willing to accept that.
Or there are people who are willing to accept the fact that they're not going to really believe what he says. Mm-hmm. It's, they don't care if they have a president they can believe or not.
That's right. No, that's what it is. They say, I lie, he lies, everybody lies.
But, you know, keep
don't
in mind
bother
that,
me with those
you know, the ratings
trifles.
Of The Apprentice eventually went down. I don't think it has the popularity it once did.
Well, so, but all television shows, even the best show that has ever been produced, Gunsmoke, finally had an end.
Don't you know?
Don't you know?
Hey, I want to make a quick clarification. Of last week's program, Rex and Alan and Stu Shinsky were talking about the Gannett potential purchase of Tribune Company, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Digital First Media came up, and that's the company that I worked for until I retired. And it was said that Digital First Media's problems currently are a result of a heavy debt load. And that was once the case, but bankruptcies, Chapter 11s, took care of most of that. And to the extent that Digital First Media, as far as I know, and I'm no longer privy to the company, to the extent that they are making cuts or selling properties, they are now owned by a hedge fund, and a hedge fund wants a return on its investment. So debt may be one time, but no longer. It's a whole different strategy. And Digital First Media, while it did sell papers such as the Berkshire Eagle in our region, it did purchase papers in Southern California. So,
well, Ira, you know, I hear you. I think it's very good that you've disclosed that you worked for them and that you get a pension from them. And that
I get a pension from the Journal Register Company, a predecessor company.
But bought by Digital Press. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Trifles. But on top of that, I think, if I remember correctly, that Rex was, in fact, putting it in the historical context, not in the present context.
No, let's not quibble about it. But because I listened to that part very carefully, as you might imagine,
it's
not entirely wrong in that there was once a problem. But the issue now, any decisions that they are making to either cut or expand are based on the fact of who their owner is. And I'm sure the owner would be very happy to sell every paper in that company if he could make a lot of money on it. But right now they seem to be selling piecemeal, but they have purchased others. So,
Okay. You've done your duty.
I've done my duty. Nobody asked me to do it. This is clearly on my account here. And my pension was never in doubt. What do you guys think of Peter Thiel? Do you know who his name ring a bell?
Is that Hulk Hogan?
Yeah, Peter Thiel is a billionaire in Silicon Valley who was the subject of a story in Gawker Media at some point, 2007. Gawker Media outed him as gay, much to his dismay. He did not want to be outed. He is, by the way, the co-founder of PayPal. Now, we all know, flash forward to the recent last couple of years, when Hulk Hogan, the professional wrestler, sued Gawker Media regarding their release of a sex tape. He won the judgment for an incredibly high amount of money. I want to say $148 million, but maybe that was Aaron Andrews. But at any rate, it was disclosed by Peter Thiel that he was the guy who funded Hulk Hogan's lawsuit. And the question has come up in the weeks since as to whether this kind of payment by somebody with very, very deep pockets to back an individual or a company into suing a media outlet, even one as despicable as one may think Gawker is, will result in a chilling effect for the print press, for the broadcast media. Should we be concerned about it, or is it just typical media overreaction and whining?
You know, I tend to, Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder and now the owner of the Washington Post, came out with, you know, a statement at a conference this week that talked about how you need to get thicker skin and, you know, the
meaning feel.
Feel and, you know, that the freedom of the press was important and the ability to say what you wanted to say is important. It does have a chilling effect. And the other spectrum, you can sue who you want to sue in this country. That's another part of our constitutional
freedom. That wasn't my major question about this.
What was yours?
My major question was, after Hulk Hogan won all that money, did he have to pay Thiel back?
I was thinking the same thing with interest.
Well, that, yeah,
I don't think he's gotten the money yet.
Yeah, and the case, I guess, is on appeal. So the final dollar. Meanwhile, Gawker Media founder Nick Denton has been soliciting bids to sell the company, and not sure what he would be able to get for it at this point. But, you know, the broader issue is you're finding in reading about this that media types who find the kind of journalism that Gawker does to be abhorrent are nonetheless supporting Gawker.
Well, of course. Well, that's disgusting.
As should you.
Oh, no. Now you've crossed the line.
I cast no aspersions. You run a media company.
Therefore, media companies don't have to be responsible for what they do.
I don't expect you to run a Hulk Hogan sex tape on your website. Yeah. But I do expect you to be concerned when you put something on the air that might be viewed as worthy of a lawsuit by someone who has deep pockets.
I am concerned about that. And in fact, I know a few who have been critical of what WAMC has done. And my feeling is, you know, you have to do what you have to do. You're not going to shut up as long as you're right. If you're right, then that's the best defense. And that's why we have insurance policies, and that's why we defend ourselves the way that we do. You know, Ira, I think there comes a point at which, you know, there is a unity amongst media types, which is people can have, as Judy just said, their day in court, and that was just wrong of him. But he financed it. And by the way, I'm somewhat sympathetic to him in his original complaint about Gawker doing to him what they, I mean, he's entitled to some privacy in his personal life, and I'm with him.
You know, this gets us into the tricky waters of, you know, a lot of people say they believe in the freedom of speech, but as long as they agree with the speech or as long as they don't find the speech offensive, and that's where people go, oh, no, it's okay for me to say whatever I want, but if they're saying something I think is hateful, then that's wrong. And I think that's where our country has a real challenge. It's almost like the freedom of information. Everybody talks about transparency, but when you really push them to be transparent, oh, well, they don't want that to be out.
And that, Judy, is why I love you so much, because you speak the truth straight from the heart.
And you agree with him.
I do agree with him
yes.
on that point.
Thus, you have now forever gotten into his pantheon of heroes. In the minute or so we have left, news from Pew Research, Q Allen.
Pew!
There we go. That most Americans are now getting their news from social media. I suppose that's no surprise. But what I did find as a surprise is that Wall Street analysts seem to be getting bullish on media companies as they continue to focus on digital news reports. Certainly, we do know anecdotally, if not formally, that more and more people are using their cell phones to get news, and most media companies, the traditional ones, have gone to that route and have played to that audience. That said, to my knowledge, it's still not produced gangbuster revenue.
Well, all I know is I read the New York Times three times every night.
Four times.
Sometimes four times.
Okay.
Yeah.
On your phone?
On my phone. Oh, yeah. It's charging right next to my bed. I pick it up, I go to the New York Times app, and there is what happened. Then I go to other papers sometimes, and there is surprisingly little that they're giving me. I mean, I go to one of the most despicable papers in the United States, I'm not going to name it, of course, and I look and they have almost nothing. It's amazing.
Well, at least we know one thing. Alan does not sleep well at night, and then we've got to figure out a way to solve that. But we're going to have to do that next week. For now, we're out of time. I'm Ira Fussfeld. For Judy Patrick and Alan Chartok, this has been The Media Project. Thanks for joining us.
And Ira, if I've said anything about pensions or anything else that offended you, I want to abjectly apologize.
That's the least of what you've done to offend me over the years.
Readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.